let me in. Shiba, shiba. I want to be closer to you. Shiba, shiba. Open up your soul. Shiba, shiba. Let me find that part of you, the part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. And there is so much to enjoy in and around the Bay Area that it's hard to get to everything. I'm just happy to have a sliver of things that you can enjoy. And I have a sliver of people in my actual studio, like we're real people. It's like the pandemic never happened. It's amazing. And they're here to talk about a thing called Reorient. I'd like to welcome Amal Bishara and Sophia Ahmed. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Marilyn.
So first of all, tell me a little bit about the program that you guys are all a part of.
Would you like to start?
Okay, I'll start. Sure. Well, it's called the Reorient Festival of mm-hmm. Short Plays. Mm-hmm. And it's been created to be one evening of short plays in six different plays that have been selected from over 100 submissions over a 2-year process. And
wow.
And it's Golden Thread Theater's signature program, Reorient. It's a really unique structure where there are 5 directors, 6 plays, as I mentioned, uh-huh. an ensemble cast of 9, of which Sophia here is one of the ensemble amazing okay. actors. And basically the design team creates for all the shows. So when the audiences come, it's been created and curated as one evening okay. of plays.
Okay, so first of all, tell me about Golden Thread. What is Golden Thread?
Golden Thread is the country's first theater dedicated to plays by and about the Middle East.
Oh, okay.
It was started by Taranjia Ghiazarian about 25 years
wow.
ago. Yeah. And Reorient started in 1999. So as Amal said, it's the signature program. It's happened in kind of different configurations over the years, but because of the pandemic, the last one was in 2019, 4 years ago.
Wow.
And so it's in the past, it's been 7 plays, 6 plays, 2 different evenings. But mm-hmm. this time it's 6 short plays all in one evening, runs about 2 hours and 15 minutes with a 15-minute intermission.
And why is it called Golden Thread? Does anyone know? Is it just like something he liked?
That's a great question, why Taranja named it Golden Thread. I believe that's the route, the original silk route was
okay.
considered a golden thread.
Okay.
So, yeah, and some people have asked, is it Golden Threads? It's Golden Thread Productions.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how long have you both been a part of this, of Golden Thread?
I started working with Golden Thread probably 2 years ago.
Okay.
I used to work in the San Francisco Unified School District directing musicals, and oh. The pandemic actually mentioning that, you know, I transitioned into, you know, it's been a dream to help uh-huh. tell like Middle East narratives. And so I really transitioned from that. So I started out stage managing a show, the children's show, and then now I'm co-producing this festival and also directing 2 of the
wow,
plays.
Wow, that's a meteoric
yeah.
rise.
It's been, I've felt so welcomed into Golden Thread, and uh-huh. you know, I have lots of directing experience and lots of producing experience, sort of like in the school district, you basically do everything.
Yeah.
You know, so my skill set is broad. And it's worked out really well.
Well, you need a broad skill set in, you know, community theater. It really helps to be able to put on different hats. And how about
Absolutely.
You? How long have you been a part of it?
My first show was 20 years ago.
What?
I did a play called Love Missile in 2003 at Langton Arts, south of Market.
Were you one of the kids or something?
You're so kind. No, that's when I was starting out my career.
Oh, okay.
I think it was actually my first professional show. I, you know, got a degree in theater and I was moving back to the Bay Area.
Did you feel you'd arrived when you got it? You're like,
I did. And also, like, I felt home. You know, I had done so much theater. I'd done a ton of Shakespeare and always my dad is Pakistani. And so that part of my identity was always kind of like hanging, hanging in the wind. And I joined Golden Thread and felt like I was coming home.
Very nice.
And so I've been affiliated ever since. I've done several plays. I've kind of consulted with the education program. Now I'm a resident artist. I got to be a part of the group that picked the plays for this Reorient, which was really a lovely process to be a part of.
Now, why is it called Reorient?
I believe that it's trying to, you know, the Middle East is kind of a problematic term. And the Orient, those are kind of Western terms for a very diverse geography. And I think Golden Thread has said, like, the middle of what? It's the Middle East, but the middle of what? It's based on kind of Western thoughts about the area. So I think it's trying to shift perspectives about the area. And one thing that I was listening to Sahar speak about it, who's the current artistic director, Sahar Asaf, who joined, I believe, in 2021 as the artistic director. And she was saying that usually Golden Thread only produces two plays a year. And so there's so many stories and so many writers from the broad geographic area of the Middle East. And so being able to do Reorient allows six different playwrights and six different stories and six different perspectives, which is so neat. So it's trying to shift our perspective and get a broader understanding of the area and the people that are so incredibly diverse. And this lineup is so diverse in terms of the stories told and the styles of the plays. And yeah.
Well, I have two questions. The first of all, what do people from that area, from that region, call it themselves, as opposed to, you know, the way the Western people refer to it? That's number one, which I'll let you answer.
So I think there's a few different terms going around right now. MENA is one of them, which is Middle East, North African. A broader one is Manasa, Middle East, North African, South Asian. And then getting rid of the Middle East in the term entirely is SWANA, which is Southwest Asian, North African.
Okay.
So it's very geographic and not kind of a middle of where you're talking
about. Right. Because I know a lot of people, when they think of the Middle East, they're like, Egypt, and you have to remind them, like, you know, Egypt's in Africa, right?
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
You know, it doesn't compute for a lot of people. It's like, yes.
Yeah.
But, and then my next question is, you talk about the wide range of people that are in there, given that there tend to be a lot of conflicts in that area. Do those conflicts do they spill over, or is it because you're in a theatrical setting that people are able to sort of manage or see the conflicts differently so that they don't have to be antagonistic about it?
I'll speak to that. I think one thing that happens in the broader region of the Middle East, and as Sophia said, that term is actually really problematic for me too. And it's like middle of what, but also east of where?
Okay.
You know, there's like the two parts of it, you know, and it's a lot like, you know, the West has been involved in that region and made divisions and lines and countries, and there's been a lot of occupations, and you know, the term conflict even can sometimes be misleading. But what was the question?
How to manage.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of the mission of Golden Thread is to tell the stories ourselves. Because a lot of times the stories get told about us. And as is represented, even your point about Egypt, there's one play that has an Arab Egyptian and then a Black Egyptian. Mm-hmm. And that's actually part of the storyline. How confused people are about that. Because like, what does it mean to be Arab? There are so many different countries, you know? So it really, like, this play represents, there's an Armenian story. There's an Egyptian story. There's American, the play Closure, American Muslim young women raised in the United States. And mm-hmm. and one thing about this year's festival that has been pointed out and noticed is that that these plays, it's the first year that all of the plays have been set in the United States, actually, or even though they're about Middle Eastern countries. And they're all, like, are they all contemporary? All except for one is a contemporary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they're contemporary stories. They are, you know, modern stories of people from the world, really. They're the human stories told mm-hmm. through our own voices.
Very good. Very good. So then getting back to when you have people who maybe you might have two actors and their countries, their home countries are currently fussing with one another. Does that spill over, or is it more of a theater helps us mitigate these conflicts, for lack of a better word?
I would just say it's impossible for the human experience not to influence the
sure.
work. And, you know, there is a lot of trauma in a lot of our stories. And so some of the themes in the plays are heavy, but there's also a lot of levity mm-hmm. and a lot of really looking at the issues. And, you know, I view theater, like, part of why I'm passionate about Golden Thread's mission is because my belief is that human beings are essentially the same.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these divisions of ethnicity, race, you know, countries, you know, ultimately we all experience the same emotions, the same human emotions. And I think it's almost impossible. Like, I really feel like telling stories, we can connect with each other's humanity mm-hmm. and that will transform the world. So it's theater, but I think the power is in being able to tell our own versions of our stories. But the trauma, the grief that comes from our experiences is definitely present.
Okay. Well, then let's talk about the six plays. You said six plays and five directors. Does that mean
yes.
that one director got two, or does that mean like you're like, okay, everyone's going to direct this one?
I feel like I've been talking.
Oh,
go ahead.
No, that's fine. So there's five directors, and then Amal and Sahar are co-directing a play. So they each direct mm-hmm. a play solo, and then they co-direct.
Okay. So what are the plays?
You're good at math, by the way. You're like, wait, these numbers don't add up.
So the first one is Stamp Me by Yusuf Al-Gindi, who's Golden Thread has, I think he's the most produced playwright in Golden Thread's mm-hmm. history. And that's a monologue, a solo performer on stage mm-hmm. In an immigration line trying to come in, probably, you know, it's not stated, but probably SFO, an Egyptian, trying to come in with passport in hand and hoping to be let in. And then the second play is Closure, is two Arab-American Muslim women who knew each other 20 years ago and are meeting again. And, you know, we can't tell too much about the story.
Sure.
they have a challenge. And that's the most, I would say, most realistic play. It's a Chicago style. It's very realistic,
okay.
very fast-paced. Okay. I'm in that with another wonderful actress, Nema Hussein. And the third play is set in a couples counseling office in San Francisco, like the hottest new couples counseling. And then there's an intermission of 15 minutes. And then there's a very absurdist play that Amal co-directed with Sahar called A Massacre,
ooh.
Set in an office with a pile of bodies on the floor, but very absurdist about what's going to happen. Yeah, yeah. And then the Picture Bride, which is a young Armenian woman fleeing the Armenian genocide at Ellis Island. And that's a monologue as well that Amal could potentially speak more to. She directed that. And then the final play is a play within a play within a play. It's very farcical, by Hamed Sino, who was a musician with Meshulela, which is a very well-known rock band that has now disbanded, but is now turning to writing and has written this play. And each play lasts about 15 minutes to 30 minutes.
Okay.
And we should say that it's at Potrero Stage in San Francisco.
Where is Potrero Stage for people who've not been there before?
It's 1695 18th Street in San Francisco.
Now, is that like, is that the one that's sort of over the hill and down? Or
it's at the bottom of the hill. Okay. So yeah, there's the kind of commercial district of Potrero Hill, and you go down the hill a couple of blocks.
Because that's
right
one of those ones where you're looking, you're like, is this it? Because I don't want to go down that hill if it's not it.
Totally. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Love that description. Yes. I hate walking up hills.
It's a very San Francisco location. Yeah.
So where would people get tickets if they when they want to see it?
So at our website, it's goldenthread.org/tickets.
Okay.
Also, you could Google Golden Thread Reorient Festival. It runs, well, we opened on the 16th and it runs through November 4th.
Oh, excellent. Nice.
Double check the schedule, but it's generally Thursday, Friday, Saturdays with a Sunday matinee.
Oh, so
more weekends.
Yes.
Yeah. So this week, Thursday through Sunday, and then next week, Wednesday through Saturday, we close Saturday night, November 4th.
Okay. And is it 8 or 7 o'clock? Show
great card. Question. 8 on weeknight, 8 at night. Mm-hmm. So the Wednesday and the Thursday through Saturday, and this last Sunday matinee is at 3. And this coming weekend is the Manatma convening.
I was just gonna pull up that.
Go
yes.
for it.
Yeah. So also as part of the festival is the MENA Theater Makers Alliance convening, which is going to be panels and discussions. People coming from all over the country, all the other Middle Eastern focused theater companies will be there.
Uh-huh. Most of our playwrights will be there
this
weekend. Yeah.
So people can like schmooze with them and
talk and
pick their brains.
Exactly.
Yeah. And really looking at shaping the future of, you know, Middle Eastern theater in this country and representation. So that's October 28th and 29th. It's like both days. And Friday night performance of Reorient is included with that festival, too.
Excellent.
Or that convening.
So one more time for our listening audience, where is the website where they can get tickets and find out more about the shows?
So I'll say we would love, love, love to have everyone join us. And it's goldenthread.org/tickets. You can find the festival is again called Reorient Festival of Short Plays. Yes.
Yeah.
What was that the list?
Yeah.
Goldenthread.org.
Yes.
.org.
Okay. .org. Yeah. And it's a really exciting evening of plays. You'll laugh. You'll cry. It's so moving. Would love to see you there.
All right. Well, Amal Bishara and Sophia Ahmed, I want to thank you both for being on the show today. Shout out to your parents.
Yay.
Yay.
And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you, Marilyn.
People of Earth, this is your opportunity. You get how many plays was it? Did you say six?
Six plays in one evening.
Six plays in one evening. So you'll want to check that out. In just a little bit, we'll be speaking with Graham Lustig from the Oakland Ballet about Luna Mexicana. So stay with us.
Ready, Pop?
Yep.
Ready, son?
Uh-huh.
Let's go.
Let's go.
One, two.
Lolly, 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 get your adverbs here. Lolly, 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 got some adverbs here. Come on down to Lolly's, get the adverbs here. You're going to need if you write or read or even think about it. Lolly, 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 get your adverbs here. Got a lot of lolly, jolly adverbs here. Anything you need and we can make it absolutely clear. Is a word.
That's all it is, and there's a lot of them.
That modifies a verb.
Sometimes a verb, sometimes.
It modifies an adjective, or else another adverb. And so you see, that is positively very, very necessary. Lolly, 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 get your adverbs here. Father, son, and lolly selling adverbs here. Got a lot of adverbs, and we make it clear. So come to Lolly.
Hello, folks. This is Lolly Sr. saying we have every adverb in the book, so come on down and look.
Hello, folks. Lolly Jr. here. Suppose your house needs painting. How are you going to paint it? That's where the adverb comes in. We can also give you a special intensifier so you can paint it very neatly or rather sloppily.
Ah, ha! Suppose you're going nut gathering. your buddy wants to know where and when. Use an adverb and tell him.
Get your adverb. Use it with an adjective. It says much more. Anything described can be described some more. Anything you'd ever need is in the store. And so you choose very carefully every word you use. Use it with a verb. It tells us how you did, where it happened, where you're going, where you've been. Use it with another adverb at the end. And even more. How, where, or when, condition or reason. These questions are answered when you use an adverb.
Come and get it.
Lolly, 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 get your adverbs here. Quickly, 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 get those adverbs here. Slowly, surely, really learn your adverbs here. You're going to need them if you read them, if you write or talk or think about them, Lolly.
If it's an adverb, we have it at Lolly's. Bring along your old adjectives, too, like slow, soft, and sure. We'll fit them out with our L-Y attachment and make perfectly good adverbs out of them.
Get your adverbs here.
Lots of good tricks at Lolly's, so come on down.
Lolly, lolly, lolly.
Adverbs deal with manner, place, time.
Lolly, lolly, lolly.
Condition, reason.
Father, son, and lolly.
Comparison, contrast.
Lolly, lolly, lolly.
Enrich your language with adverbs.
Lolly, lolly, lolly.
Besides, they're absolutely free.
Lolly, lolly, lolly.
At your service.
Indubitably.
See, you learn something when you tune into KPO. Oh, now you know all about adverbs. And now you're going to learn all about what's going on at the Oakland Ballet, because there's a show called Luna Mexicana. Here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome Artistic Director Graham Lustig. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be here with you.
So how long have you been Artistic Director?
I was appointed in 2010, but that was sort of on a sort of long-distance relationship originally, and then in 2016, the board invited me to move here full-time.
Oh, very nice, very nice. And so what was the first, do you recall the first show that you did with the Oakland Ballet?
Oh, well, yes, it was, in fact, Luna Mexicana.
Oh, really?
In 2016, absolutely, yes.
Oh, that's great.
And,
so do you
there
guys...
was some political dialogue at the time that wasn't very favorable for our Latino community, and I just thought, well, I'm the director of a ballet company. What could we do to change that dialogue, to celebrate the beautiful culture of Mexico, the music, the dancing, the costumes, the food? So Luna Mexicana was born, and we've been doing it every end of October, beginning of November, around the days of Dia de los Muertos. And we present ballet folklorico, ballet azteca, mariachi, and some lovely dancers. And it's a beautiful occasion for the family to come out.
So who puts together the dance portion of it? Is it you, or is there a resident choreographer?
It's been different at different times. I'm sort of, if you like, the producer. I put the whole show together, but we've collaborated with different ballet folklorico. And this year we're collaborating with ballet folklorico Mexico dancer who hail from Hayward. And we're actually doing a revival. In 2018, we presented Viva la Vida for the first time. And this is the Ballet Folklorico and the Ballet Company collectively on stage. Sometimes they're showing dances, their own dances from Oaxaca. And sometimes the two companies are dancing together to help bring to life the times and the stories behind the life of Frida Kahlo.
So tell me more about the source material that you use to put together the shows.
Source material, I mean, there's a lot of rich inspiration in Mexican culture, of course. Martin Romero is the choreographer from Ballet Folklorico Mexico Dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is the person who puts together all of the Mexico Dancer pieces of the choreography. And we collaborated on some of the joint pieces of choreography together. Gilberto Elderos is the person who's in charge of the Aztec Dance Company,
mm-hmm.
and he is in charge of all of that choreography. But that choreography, of course, is choreography. It's choreography that has a different spiritual connection, because they actually come to the theater to bless the four directions, to honor the space in which we're going to be holding the performance. So it's not necessarily, although it's incredibly, impressive, and it's not like choreography for a show. It's choreography that's part of their culture, that's just presented on stage in these incredible costumes with huge feather headdresses and shells around their ankles, and it's with drumming and incense on stage. So it really is a very elemental kind of dance.
Okay, so we've got the ballet portion, and you were talking about the costuming. Do the people, do the groups that you're working with themselves come with the costumes, or do you have an in-house?
Yes. No, they come with their amazing costumes. They bring them with them.
That's pretty awesome. So when you're...
Oh, yeah, it's quite fantastic. Yeah, I've seen them many times. The Fruitvale, the Unity Council organizes an incredible Dia de los Muertos event. It's taking place this coming Sunday. And in the open air, they have incredible performances taking place all day long.
So what kind of response have you gotten from the community about Luna Mexicana?
Well, I suppose the truth is it's been overwhelmingly positive.
Oh, yay!
It's been really remarkable. Families come, some of them dressed to their nines in their best Day of the Dead attire, skull faces and bridles. And, we have an ofrenda, decorated ofrenda in the lobby made by a local artist every year.
And what's an ofrenda?
This year, pardon?
What's an ofrenda?
Oh, an ofrenda. Oh, okay. So an ofrenda is an altar. And in Mexico, and now, of course, many more people here in America are celebrating their ancestors. And the ofrenda is something that's typically decorated. The altar is decorated by a grave site. Mm-hmm. And you have photographs of your past loved ones. You might have an artifact, a favorite comb, a mirror, a photograph. Just all sorts of different. And then you try to prepare foods that will help attract your ancestors to come visit you for that special night.
Mm.
So there might be a special type of cookies and some kind of food that they would enjoy. And there's water, there's salt, there are sort of elemental things that you need for life. There's usually fire, there are candles. And this is to attract the souls of your ancestors to come and visit with you on November the 1st or the 2nd.
Now,
the idea, and then of course now we have fantastic artists in the community who then really go to town and design from their artist perspective and from their cultural perspective. They design an ofrenda that is more than personal. It's meant to be enjoyed by everybody.
That's great. So when you say you started this, it was your first thing, but back in 2016, did you say, or 2015?
That's right. When I became full-time director, the first show we put on.
So when you were first doing it, did you know much about it, or did you learn as you over the years and over time about all of the different aspects of the culture?
Oh, well, I knew quite a lot. I had performed in my own dance career. I had performed in Mexico City at Teatro Bellas Artes, and we were very graciously hosted there. And so I've known about the culture and enjoyed the culture for quite a few decades. But the truth is that the way that the local community has opened its arms to me and to us, it's just so generous and so loving and so proud, and I feel so privileged to be able to help to make this art available to the community and to share it with everybody. I also want to let you know, we do go into the schools as well.
Nice.
We have a school show this coming Thursday afternoon where we go into the school and perform. And one of the most profound messages I got from a student, oftentimes they go back to their classrooms and they do artwork and they write us a note.
Mm-hmm.
And one day this artwork showed up and it was full of skeletons, right? And this little boy, I think he was about 8 years old, and said, until I saw your performance, I was very frightened at Day of the Dead. I didn't really understand it. But now that I do, I felt the spirit of my grandfather standing next to me.
Aw, that's beautiful. I love that.
And I just thought, well, this is beautiful, isn't it? It's just if you can help us all just stand still for a moment and think about where we came from, on whose shoulders we stand, and be grateful and celebrate everything, the hardships that they went through, so that mm-hmm. we could have good lives. And that's a universal message. You don't have to be a Latino to really appreciate that.
Right, right. And yeah, and want to honor your yeah. ancestors in a spiritual
yeah.
way.
So, I know, all around it's a beautiful thing, and I'm delighted and honored to be able to share all of this beautiful art. We're performing this coming Saturday in San Jose at the Hammer Theater at 7:30. And then we have two performances the following weekend in Oakland at the Paramount. October 3rd is a Friday evening at 7:30 and Saturday the 4th at 2:30. And if you haven't seen it, I encourage all of your listeners to come and have a wonderful night out. You'll really enjoy all the aspects of this.
Well, that brings me to the question of how do people go about getting tickets either to the Hammer Theater Center or the Paramount Theater. And I'm looking at your site, and it says that the Hammer Theater on Saturday and Sunday, it says it's 2:30. So is that correct, or did that change?
There's no show on Sunday, the 29th, currently. There's just one show on. Did I say 7:30 on Saturday? I beg your pardon. It's 2:30. It's a matinee.
Oh, okay.
On the 28th.
Okay.
Forgive me. Yeah, thank you for correcting me on that. And if anybody wants tickets, it would be just via our website, openballet.org.
Okay. Now, in addition to the Luna Mexicana, what have you got? What's coming up after that?
Well, I'm sure it'll come as no surprise to you. The Oakland Ballet's been performing the Nutcracker for almost 60 years. And so that's our next show. Mm-hmm. Again, we have school shows, and we actually open our dress rehearsal to 2,600 Oakland Unified School District students as well. And then the public performances are taking place on the 16th and the 17th of December. And on the Saturday, the 16th, the performances are at 11 and 3 o'clock. That's very family-friendly times. And then on Sunday at 1 o'clock, Sunday the 17th. This is a performance where we have accompanied by the incredible Oakland Symphony, mm-hmm. and we have the Piedmont Oakland Children's Choir as well singing with us. And this year's director is Pam Martin. And it's a great show. A lot of people get dressed up and get their picture taken in front of a 20-foot-high Christmas tree in the lobby of the Paramount.
Well, that sounds fantastic, and people will be able to find out about that on your website as well?
Absolutely. That's where all the tickets are.
Okay. So once again, for our listening audience, when and what times for Luna Mexicana?
Luna Mexicana is going to be at the Hammer Theater on Saturday, the 28th of October. That's the Hammer Theater in San Jose, mm-hmm. at 2:30 in the afternoon. So it's a matinee performance. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be performing at the Paramount Theater in Oakland on November the 3rd, Friday, at 7:30. And the following day, the 4th, Saturday, at 2:30. And tickets can be found by visiting the Oakland Ballet website, www.oaklandballet.org. That's where you'll find us.
Excellent.
Please come out. Support your local arts community.
Yeah, and bring your kids, because it will help. It will help dissipate that fear of skeletons and whatnot.
Yeah, I would hate anybody to be afraid of what the skeletons represent. It's really about a celebration of life. It sounds contrary, but it most definitely is about being here and being grateful.
Well, with that, Graham Lustig, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for this invitation. I appreciate it very much. All the best.
All right. Okay, people of Earth, Luna Mexicana. This sounds amazing. Bring your kids.
Ochun tiene siete sayas. Son de la misma opinión, teniendo casa, salen a buscar ratón. Barará.
¿Cómo está Miguel? ¿Cómo está Miguel? ¿Cómo está Miguel?
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Heard from Celia Cruz and Elegua Quiere Tambo. We heard from Cheo Belén Puig y Almendra de Abalardito Valdez. And it was Bururu Barara, which is one of my favorite songs. And but that's neither here nor there. What's here or there is it's Halloween season, and I love scary movies, and when I saw the title of this program that's coming up at the Museum of African Diaspora, I got so excited because it's about black horror films. Here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome Dr. Artel Great and Elizabeth Gessel. Welcome.
Thank Hello. You so much for having me.
Thank you both for being here today. So first, Dr. Great, tell us a little bit about your pedigree.
Oh, well, I am the cultural critic in residence at the Museum of the African Diaspora in San Francisco. I'm also a endowed chair in African American Cinema Studies at San Francisco State University.
Wow.
And really excited about this program, really excited to be here with you today.
And Elizabeth Gessel, or is it Gessel or Jessel?
Gessel's correct.
Excellent, excellent. Tell us a little bit. I know you're a director of public programs. How long have you been involved with the Museum of African Diaspora?
Yeah, I'm the director of public programs at MOAD, and I've been there for 14 years.
Wow.
I started as an intern and worked my way up.
Excellent, excellent. So tell me, what was if it were me, this would have been a no-brainer, but what was the inspiration for doing a series on black horror films?
It's a great question. Well, I knew that in my work as the cultural critic in residence, I knew what I desired to do is really kind of activate programming that will really reach audiences, both in the public sector, but also in the intellectual community, and really fostering this type of really deep level of engagement. So mm-hmm. when I was working on the book, Black Cinema and Visual Culture, the idea of black horror really came about as one of the kind of preeminent genres in film that we now see very prevalent today.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I would argue that, you know, we've entered into this new golden era, really, of black horror films and cinema. And I think it was really launched by the work of Jordan Peele and the success of a film like Get Out,
mm-hmm.
which really took the film industry and culturally, you know, it took the industry by storm because the film was so poignant and symbolic,
mm-hmm.
but it was also, you know, so successful. And I think that, you know, just thinking about horror films, black horror in particular, in this context, given where we are now, it is a no-brainer, Marilyn,
mm-hmm.
Because, you know, one might argue that the black experience in this country has been the basis for the longest running horror film in history.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, I do. I do have a question for you is, what do you consider to be the very first black horror film? Like, how far back did
That's
we go?
A good question. Yeah, a lot of people point to The Night of the Living Dead as this kind of breakthrough moment in terms of black horror, but and that's because of the presence of the lead actor, mm-hmm. Dwayne Jones. But the history of black horror in film it goes far back. I mean, the history is so rich. A lot of the history of Black contributions, particularly in cinema, but in general also, is remains largely hidden. There has been a rich tradition of Black horror on the silver screen dating back to the 1930s and 40s, when we just came out of the silent era of film. So I would say that the first Black horror film was actually directed by Spencer Williams, mm-hmm. who was a brilliant actor and filmmaker. Most people know him from his work on the early 1950s television sitcom Amos and Andy, but he was also a director in the 1930s and 40s. And this film was called The Son of Ngagi. The mm-hmm. Son of Ngagi. I think it was in the 1940s where Spencer Williams directs this film. And this was an all-Black cast. It was an all-Black milieu. And it really used the horror film genre as a vehicle to push back against the racial stereotypes of the era.
Now, tell me, so how many directors, how many African-American directors or African directors in general, what's like the percentage that focus on the horror theme? Because you don't really hear, like, you know which of the other types of directors are like, they focus on a specific genre, but what about in the African-American community?
Yeah, well, historically, it hasn't been a genre that has had a lot of representation in terms of Black participation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people point to, again, when you say Night of the Living Dead, well, that's really not a Black horror film. It has a Black lead, but that's right. Really a genre film, zombie film. Mm-hmm. But then in the 1970s, we see films like Blackenstein. We see films like Blackula.
Yep.
And these films are, you know, people also point to them. I think they're key moments. But again, those films aren't directed by Black directors. It's not until we get to the 1990s that you start to see more Black participation in terms of the horror films genre. Mm-hmm. Films like Tales from the Hood, mm-hmm. right, which mm-hmm. was a big breakthrough hit at that time. Eve's Bayou was another one. A lot of people forget about that film, or maybe they miscategorize it, but that film definitely deals with the horrors of Black experiences in America. And I think that horror films generally, you know, are largely symbolic, but they deal with the expression of a certain longing, whether that be a longing for a lost history, a longing for justice, a longing for, you know, revenge. Mm-hmm. We see this play itself out. And so I would say now, more than ever, where we are in this contemporary moment is really the moment where we're starting to see a large range of Black participation in films, particularly, Ray, the sequel to Candyman, which was directed by a Black woman, Nia DaCosta. Mm. And that's significant because that Candyman Part 2 became the first film directed by a Black woman to hit number one at the box office, right? That had never happened before she directed this sequel to Candyman. But then there's also the recent film, which I'm going to talk about on the program on Wednesday, the film Nanny, was directed by a Black woman as well. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Jordan Peele, and then also the work, the television series Lovecraft Country is another kind of Black horror elements that it deals with there. So I say now where we are in this particular moment, mm-hmm. is where we're finding the most participation in the genre itself.
Excellent, excellent. Now, you and Elizabeth, I'm guessing, work hand in hand in putting all of this together. So, Elizabeth, tell me a little bit about your role in the creation of of this series of movies?
Well, I worked closely with Dr. Great when I was introduced to him and learned about all of the different things that he studies and ways that he speaks about film and culture and art and politics. And I knew that it was a perfect match for the programming at Museum of the African Diaspora. And so we created this residency, the Cultural Critic in Residence, for Dr. Great, so that we could feature him and his programming at the museum. So I've been working closely with him to develop the program and to create these different types of programs that he's been presenting. He's done lecture series on different genres of films. One was called Soul Cinema, looking at Black cinema in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. He did a symposium about his book that he mentioned that he co-edited with Ed Guerrero, who's going to be at the program on Wednesday as well, called Black Visual Politics, Black Cinema and Visual Politics in the 21st Century. And then we're super excited about this program that's coming up on Wednesday as well.
So I know that there are listeners who their interest is piqued. What are the movies that you're going to be showing?
Yes, so we're going to be discussing a range of films.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really interesting because I would really like to spend so much time, Elizabeth, this might even be a series, I don't even know, but spend a lot more time on these films because the in preparation, so much goes into this, Marilyn. Like, you know, developing a series like this or a program like this, so much goes into it, so much preparation. So, you know, I'm studying these films, I'm watching them over and over again, I'm taking notes, I'm reading literature,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's so much here. And
yes.
I think that in many ways, Black horror films are connected to this type of, you know, social catharsis that Black people are longing for, and a lot of them are really wrestling with these kind of the gruesome history of America. And so some of the films that I'm really interested in are have been films that deal with these kind of real issues in an allegorical way. So we'll talk a little bit about, from a historical perspective, we'll talk a little bit about the Blaxploitation era films, mm-hmm, that really kind of popularized Black horror as a commercially viable genre. Films like Blackula, mm-hmm, right, which is an important film.
Yes.
Because it's not just, it's campy and it's fun and it's quirky and it's horror, but it's a film that possesses, I think, a deeper social depth. The film features, you know, the backstory of how Blackula came to be. He was, mm-hmm, an African prince, you know, who was captured by Dracula, you know, and forced into bondage. So that, you know, obviously is an allegory for, again, Black experiences in America,
right,
as well. So we'll talk about films like that. We'll also talk about some underseen films like Kiombo, Countryman, which bring in the diasporic elements of Black horror. We'll also talk about some contemporary milestones, some classics like The First Candyman, Tales from the Hood. We'll also talk about films like Get Out, films like Nanny, which was a big, big hit at Sundance in 2022. I think it's on Amazon Prime right now. People haven't really seen this film, but it's directed by a Black woman, and it's really kind of ambient and mystical, which I think Black horror possesses a great deal of mystical qualities. We'll also talk about one of my personal favorites, The First Purge,
mm-hmm,
which came out in 2018, and they cloned Tyrone, which was released earlier this year, which I think is just a monumental film that I think is rather underappreciated in the Black horror film landscape.
I just have to share with you a story that a friend told me many years ago. He said when he was a little kid, he loved watching horror films, and he said they never ever scared him because they were all happening to white people. And then one night he saw Blackula, and he said it scared the living daylights out of him because it was the first time he saw a horror movie where something was actually happening to black people. And that always cracked me up when he told me that story, because he was like 8 or 9 when he saw it.
Absolutely. No, I mean, it's a very peculiar genre. You know, why do people like horror films? It terrifies you, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same experience, I think, is similar to the pleasure that one derives from riding roller coasters. You get on the roller coaster, it's scary in the moment, you scream your head off, but then it's over. You know, you're thrilled that you did it.
Yes.
The question is, you know, for black folks, what happens when the roller coaster ride doesn't end?
Right. And to that point, when I think about Night of the Living Dead, it also reflects the black experience of you can do everything right and still get shot by the police. But you know, but that's neither here nor there.
Absolutely right. And that I think also spawns horror film tropes, you mm-hmm. know, that we see repeated over and over again to the point of satire. The recent film, The Blackening, that just came out.
Yes,
and
I
also
saw it.
Obviously the Scary Movie, you mm-hmm. know, series, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are these tropes that have become satirized because they become, you know, so conventional and so kind of overutilized, right?
Right.
In these films.
All right. Well, we're almost out of time. I want to make sure our listening audience knows when and what time for the show. So I'm going to let Elizabeth drive that one.
Yeah, thank you. So the program is going to be on Wednesday, October 25th, this coming Wednesday, at mm-hmm. Museum of the African Diaspora, which is at 685 Mission Street in San Francisco. And it starts at 6:30 p.m. You can register in advance at our website, which is moadsf.org. We also will be live streaming the program on Moad's YouTube channel. So if you can't make it into the museum that night, you can watch it on YouTube. But I actually encourage everyone to come in and experience this incredible program in person at Moad.
All right. And if people want to find out more about you, Dr. Great, and your book, how would they go about doing that?
Sure. The book is available wherever books are sold. It's also available at the Moad bookstore. It's available on Amazon. And, you know, you can follow me. I'm on social media at Dr. Artel Great. And I look forward to having everyone come through on Wednesday. The Pleasures of Fear. The program is called The Pleasures of Fear.
The Pleasures
Black
of Fear.
Black horror films and the American dream.
And Elizabeth, if people want to find out more about the different programs that are offered at Moad, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, you can also go to our website, moadsf.org, and check out the calendar, and it will give you a long list of upcoming programs, both on-site and virtual, coming up at the museum.
And where is the museum located for those who may not necessarily know?
Yeah, it's at 685 Mission Street. The cross street is 3rd. It's in the Yerba Buena Cultural District neighborhood.
Well, Dr. Artel Great, Elizabeth Gessel, I want to thank you both for being on the show today, and I'm looking really forward to hearing more about the program.
Thank you so much
for having me.
Okay. All right. People of Earth, horror movies, Museum of African Diaspora. I think it's going to be off the hook. You know what else is going to be off the hook? Mr. Ford's show. So you're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Until next week, my friends, ta-ta and toodly-doo.